Her biggest fear had been that the foot of the bed would try to hang up, either in the bathroom door or the far corner of the room, making it necessary for her to back and fill like a woman trying to shoehorn a big car into a small parking space. As it turned out, the rightward tending arc the bed described as she moved it slowly across the room was almost perfect. She only had to make a single mid-course correction, pulling her end of the bed a little farther to the left, so she could be sure the other end would clear the bureau. It was while she was doing this, pulling with her head down and her butt out and both arms wrapped tightly around the bedpost, that she suffered her first bout of lightheadedness. Only as she lay with her weight against the post, looking like a woman who is so drunk and tired that she can only stand up by pretending to dance cheek to cheek with her boyfriend, she thought that dark-headedness would probably be a better way to describe it. The dominant feeling was one of loss, not just of thought and will, but of sensory input as well. For one confused moment, she was convinced that time had whiplashed, flinging her to a place that was neither Dark Score nor Kashwakamak, but some other place entirely. A place that was on the ocean rather than any inland lake. The smell was no longer oysters and pennies, but sea salt. It was the day of the eclipse again. That was the only thing that was the same. She had run into the blackberry tangles to get away from some other man, some other daddy, who wanted to do a lot more than shoot his squirt on the back of her panties. And now he was at the bottom of the well. Déjà vu poured over her like strange water. Oh, Jesus, what is this? She thought. But there was no answer. Only that puzzling image again, one she hadn't thought of since she had returned to the sheet-divided bedroom to change her clothes on the day of the eclipse. A skinny woman in a house dress, her salt-and-pepper hair put up in a bun, a puddle of white fabric beside her. Whoa, Jessie thought, clutching at the bedpost with her tattered right hand and trying desperately to keep her knees from buckling. Hold on, Jessie. Just hold on. Never mind the woman. Never mind the smell of sea salt and blackberries. Never mind the darkness. Hold on, and the darkness will pass. She did, and it did. The image of the skinny woman kneeling beside her slip and looking at the splintered hole in the old boards went first, and then the darkness began to fade. The bedroom brightened again, gradually taking on its former 5 o'clock autumn hue. She saw motes of dust dancing in the light slanting in through the lakeside windows, saw her own shadow legs stretching across the floor. They broke at the knees so that the rest of her shadow could climb the wall. The darkness pulled back, but it left a high, sweet buzzing in her ears. When she looked down at her feet, she saw they too were coated with blood. She was walking in it, leaving tracks in it. You're running out of time, Jessie. She knew. Jessie lowered her chest to the headboard again. Getting the bed started was harder this time, but she finally managed it. 2 minutes later, she was standing next to the bureau she had stared at so long and hopelessly from the other side of the room. A tiny, dry smile quivered the corners of her lips. I'm like a woman who's spent her whole life dreaming of the black sands of Kona and can't believe it when she's finally standing on them, she thought. It seems like just another dream, only maybe a little more real than most, because in this one your nose itches. Her nose didn't itch, but she was looking down at the crumbled snake of Gerald's tie, and the knot was still in it. Jessie Burlingame pulled her left hand, a little puffy around the wrist but otherwise unharmed, free of the open cuff, which fell back against the headboard as its mate had done. Then, with an expression of deep, wondering awe, she raised both hands slowly up to her face. She looked from the left to the right, and back to the left again. She was unmindful of the fact that the right was covered with blood. It was not blood she was interested in. At least not yet. For the moment, she only wanted to make absolutely sure she was really free. She looked back and forth between her hands for almost 30 seconds, her eyes moving like those of a woman watching a ping-pong match. Then she drew in a deep breath, cocked her head back, and uttered another high-pitched, drilling shriek. She felt a fresh wave of darkness, big and smooth and vicious, thunder through her, but she ignored it and went on shrieking. It seemed to her that she had no choice. It was either shriek or die. The brittle, broken glass edge of madness in that shriek was unmistakable, but it was still a scream of utter triumph and victory. 200 yards away, in the woods at the head of the driveway, the former prince lifted its head from its muzzle and looked uneasily toward the house. She couldn't seem to take her eyes off her hands, couldn't seem to stop shrieking. She had never felt anything remotely like what she was feeling now. And some distant part of her thought, if sex was even half this good, people would be doing it on every street corner. They just wouldn't be able to help themselves. Then she ran out of breath and swayed backward. She grabbed for the headboard, but a moment too late. She lost her balance and spilled onto the bedroom floor. As she went down, Jessie realized that part of her had been expecting the handcuffed chains to snub her before she fell. Pretty funny when you thought about it. She struck the open wound on the inside of her wrist as she landed. Pain lit up her right arm like the lights on a Christmas tree. And this time, when she screamed, it was all pain. She bit it off quickly when she felt herself drifting away from consciousness again. She opened her eyes and stared into her husband's torn face. Gerald looked back at her with an expression of endless, glazed surprise. This wasn't supposed to happen to me. I'm a lawyer with my name on the door. Then the fly, which had been washing its front legs on his upper lip, disappeared up one of his nostrils, and Jessie turned her head so quickly she thumped it on the floorboards and saw stars. When she opened her eyes this time, she was looking up at the headboard, with its gaudy drips and runnels of blood. Had she been standing way up there only a few seconds ago? She was pretty sure she had been, but it was hard to believe. From here, the fucking bed looked approximately as tall as the Chrysler Building.
Get moving, Jess!
It was Punkin, once more yelling in that urgent, annoying voice of hers. For someone with such a sweet little face, Punkin could certainly be a bitch when she set her mind to it. Not a bitch, she said, letting her eyes slip closed. A small, dreamy smile touched the corners of her mouth. A squeaky wheel.
Get moving, damn it!
Can't. Need a little rest first.
If you don't get moving right away, you can rest forever. Now shag your fat ass.
That got to her.
Nothing fat about it, Miss Smartmouth,
she muttered pettishly and tried to struggle to her feet. It took only 2 efforts, a second thwarted by another of those paralyzing cramps across her diaphragm, to convince her that getting up was, at least for the time being, a bad idea. And doing so would actually create more problems than it would solve, because she needed to get into the bathroom, and the foot of the bed now lay across the doorway like a roadblock. Jessie went under the bed, moving with a gliding, swimming motion that was almost graceful, blowing a few errant dust bunnies out of her way as she went. They drifted off like small gray tumbleweeds. For some reason, the dust bunnies made her think of the woman in her vision again, the woman kneeling in the blackberry tangles with her slip in a white pile beside her. She slid into the gloom of the bathroom, and a new smell smote her nostrils. The dark, mossy smell of water. Water dripping from the tub faucets. Water dripping from the shower head. Water dripping from the wash basin taps. She could even smell the peculiar waiting-to-be-mildew odor of a damp towel in the basket behind the door. Water. Water everywhere, and every drop to drink. Her throat shrank dryly inside her neck, seeming to cry out, and she became aware that she was actually touching water. A small puddle from the leaky pipe under the sink, the one the plumber never seemed to get to, no matter how many times he was asked. Gasping, Jessie pulled herself over to the puddle, dropped her head, and began to lick the linoleum. The taste of the water was indescribable, the silky feel of it on her lips and tongue beyond all dreams of sweet sensuousness. The only problem was that there wasn't enough. That enchantingly dank, enchantingly green smell was all around her. But the puddle below the sink was gone, and her thirst wasn't slaked, but only awake. That smell, the smell of shady springs and old hidden wellheads, did what not even Punkin's voice hadn't been able to do. It got Jessie on her feet again. She used the edge of the sink to haul herself up. She caught just a glimpse of an 800-year-old woman looking out of the mirror at her, and then she twisted the basin tap marked C. Fresh water, all the water in the world, came gushing out. She tried to voice that triumphant shriek again, but this time managed nothing but a harsh, susurrant whisper. She bent over the basin, her mouth opening and closing like the mouth of a fish, and lunged into that mossy wellhead perfume. It was also the bland mineral smell which had so haunted her over all the years since her father had molested her during the eclipse. But now it was all right. Now it was not the smell of fear and shame, but of life. Jessie inhaled it, then coughed it out joyously again as she shoved her open mouth into the water jetting up from the tap. She drank until a powerful but painless cramp caused her to heave it all back up again. It came still cool from its short visit in her stomach and sprayed the mirror with pink droplets. Then she gasped in several breaths and tried again. The second time, the water stayed down.